So let's start the show off with an apology, Steve. Not an apology to you, but an apology from me to all of those listening. And it's my bad. Last week's show ended early and then I tried to fix it. And by fixing it, it meant you all got an extra download of the show. So, you know, if you stuck with us, didn't unsubscribe, happy days. Thank you very much. But yeah, that's pretty much my bad. So we're going to move on from that and I'll try not to do it this week and we'll see how it goes.
It weren't that bad.
it wasn't that bad, but it shouldn't have happened. But we'll move on from that, Steve. We'll move on. We've made
our
mistakes.
That in the past.
Exactly. That's it. And we live and we learn. What doesn't kill us makes us stronger, my friend.
Exactly. Exactly. Indeed.
How are you doing this week, Steve? Are you okay? Still locked down? Is the snow still there or has it gone now?
No, the snow has completely gone now. I was a bit annoyed yesterday. We had to just nip Sarah up to the doctor's quickly just to get a prescription. And our back driveway path was like sheet ice. It was lethal. And there's us like dancing on ice, me carrying Brody into the car seat, like trying not to fall over and kill him.
Did you have the ITV crew there filming as well?
Literally, mate. If you'd have played music, I would have got a 10 out of 10. tell you. So anyway, we got back and I was like, right, I'm going to have to do something about this. So I got the shovel out and I was scraping for like hours, I swear to God. And what did it do last night? It rained and melted a lot. So I woke up this morning to a nice clear pathway. Everything's gone. My snowman has melted. He's just a two sticks and a carrot.
Oh, did you do a proper? Was it a carrot job as well?
Oh, there was, yeah, carrot and coal, mate.
Oh, I'm very impressed. Where did you get coal from? You don't have a fire.
We had some bags. I'd think there for a second. I was like, shit, where did I get the coal from? we got one of those big bags of instant barbecue bricks, you know, the stuff. It comes okay. In the bag. You just light the bag and woof, voila, 5 minutes in, you can cook one sausage on it. that stuff. So I just opened a bag and got a bit of coal out.
Okay, fair enough.
I completely forget that, of course, it is dosed in paraffin or whatever it is and stunk for about 2 days.
But yeah, you know, at least you had coal, the snowman had eyes, and that's the important thing here. It doesn't matter if it stunk of paraffin, Steve, you did it properly.
Exactly. It was a full boy. He even had a hat and a scarf, mate.
That's a classy snowman, man. I'm impressed.
That is a classy snowman. I'll send you a picture. I might even post one online so people can appreciate it.
Oh, nice. You could post that into the Facebook group, Steve.
Oh, I like where we went with that.
And if you want to see the picture of Steve Snowman, guys, you can come over and join us in our Facebook group, which has grown exponentially since we discussed it last week. But it's still a very, very small community so far. But it's been fun, actually. I've had a good week on there. So, you know, Steve will post a picture of a snowman and you guys can come and join us and chat motorbikes and snowmen with us.
No, oh, we like a good snowman chat.
Exactly. I did mean to, I don't even know what I tried to say there. I just spoke and then realized halfway through speaking, I didn't know what I was going to say. But now I've read the notes, I do know what I'm going to say. So we're going to go with it again. So I did forget to thank George, actually, about letting us know so quickly about the podcast fuck up from last week. He was very quick to email us and let us know that there had been an issue. So thank you very much, George. You saved quite a number of listeners, I believe, from having to experience the show cutting off. So thank you for that. That is 10 out of 10. Good man.
See, I'm the other way around, because I was quite happy it cut off, because it cut off my fuck up with the email. And then, like George pointed out, it was worth it just to hear Steve fuck it up. Yes, George.
Exactly. Anyway, Steve, I think we've got a lot to talk about today. So shall we dive into the show?
Let's go for it, mate.
Good stuff. I'm Tim. He's Steve. And this is For the Love of MotoGP. So, Steve, we saw two bike launches this week. We spoke about, obviously, last week we spoke about the Ducati launch and the Sponsorama Avintia VR46. Who knows what they're called anymore launch.
I've got a clue.
But this week we got, it's the chalk and cheese, I think, of team launches.
It was, yeah, definitely chalk and cheese, mate. One was just phenomenal and the other was, I don't even know how to describe it.
Well, one of them was so on point. We're gonna go into a little too much detail here, Steve. I woke up one morning. I went to the bathroom. I'm standing there brushing my teeth. I'm having a wee, and I'm like, oh, let's see what's going on in the world. So I'm scrolling on my phone, and there we go. KTM's team launch starts in literally a minute. Brilliant. So I'm there, committed, right. And after last week's fuck-up with Cherie walking in on the Ducati launch, I thought this is pretty dangerous to be in the bathroom with the door locked watching a team launch. So got to be quick with this. Thankfully, the KTM team launch was quick. It was a wonderful 8 minutes, Steve.
It was
8 minutes.
Glorious. Absolutely glorious.
It really was. It was great. It was. There was a couple of points where it started, like it cut to the almost a Skype call between like Kibaira and his boys, and between Hervé Poncharal and Petrucci and Kwona. And I was like, oh, this is a bit of a cringe, but it was over so quickly that was fine. And then we saw the livery, Steve, and the livery for the KTM bike. You know, it was already a solid livery. That it didn't really change at all. And then we saw the Tech 3 machine in all its glory.
Oh, it's just splendid, isn't it? KTM have done a fabulous job since their first year. It's always looked good. The stance of the bike, it just looks good. They've got, whoever does their graphics needs a pay rise because they are on point.
Yes.
It has always looked good. Yeah. And when we got the Tech 3 bike, I was just like, oh. Yeah. I don't get it. It's a little bit risque with all that like bright orange, but I like it.
I love it, man. I think it's going to look great. I think it's going to look really great. And I know we had a brief chat, didn't we? Once again, another plug in the Facebook group about it. And there were some people that thought that actually it was a bit much, maybe a bit too bright. I love it. I think it is the best MotoGP livery I've ever seen, without a doubt. It may be the best motorsport livery I've ever seen. I cannot wait to see it blasting around the track. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah, me too, mate. I am on board with you, especially under Qatar lights. Please let's go to Qatar now. I just want to see it all under lights. It's just going to look so good.
And it's going to be nice to be able to just look at a pack and be like, well, that's the KTM.
Yeah, you know, even if they're at the back, you'd be like, there it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a nice kind of very easy to see, I think. It's going to be great, man. I cannot wait to see it around the track. I have... I downloaded the entire MotoGP.com gallery of the KTM images because I'm like, this bike is just so nice. So nice. I've been working at them and making it backgrounds on various things.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Cherie was unimpressed when she realised the background for my phone was once a picture of her had been replaced with a picture of Danilo Petrucci.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice. To be fair, Petrucci is a good-looking lad.
He's a good-looking... He's no Morbidelli, though, is he? Let's be fair.
No, he's no Morbidelli. But that picture of him on the bike that they put on their website, where he's just sat there, big grin. Everyone was talking about it on Twitter. Somebody, I forget who it was, put on there was like, yeah, let him fuck me. And it was a bloke. And the first thing that sprung to mind was you. And your Morbidelli fascination. That's a tip.
Look, mate, it doesn't matter where you get it as long as you're having fun. That's the important thing here. And I tell you what wasn't fun, Steve. We're going to move on to the next team launch.
Oh, let's not. Can we skip over it?
Oh, my God, man. The Yamaha team launch. It was maybe the most boring and awkward hour of my life. There was no quick 8 minute brush your teeth, have a wee, maybe have a quick shower while watching this. It was a commit to sitting down for an hour. And oh, my God, I think I'd have rather eaten like cardboard than watch that again. It was so dull. But what the thing that kind of made it, we'll get onto the graphics in a minute because that was the fun bit. I think what made it worse was the fact that it was kind of in this, why was it in English? It was forced in English. No one there has English as their first language. The lady doing the presentation, although they're all very good at speaking English, don't get me wrong, and they're much, much better at speaking English than I am at speaking English, let alone any other language. But it felt very forced. I would have much preferred it all to be done in Spanish and subtitled, or Quartararo, if he wanted to speak French in here, do it in French and have it subtitled, because it would have just felt more natural. The flow would have been better, but it felt very forced. And then...
at this point, when it first came on, I thought we were on for some absolute brilliance. I really did. I sat there and I looked at it and I thought, I'm playing like games back in 1992 or something. And I thought, hang on, they're going to come out with something glorious here. And I honestly thought what was going through my head we were going to see was the evolution of the Yamaha up to present day from, like, say, the 90s. And it was just going to get better and better as it came through.
Mate, that would have been amazing. Yamaha should have paid you a shit ton of money to write their team presentation for them, because they missed a fucking trick. Because that is a great idea. Start it as shit CGI with the old bikes, move it on to, like, amazing 8K, like, really good quality for the final shots. Yeah, that would have been great, Steve.
That's exactly what I thought we were going to get. They were stood on a track. There's the pit wall behind them. And I thought, hang on, there's going to be a bike roll up and he's just going to have this beautiful flowing evolution of these lovely Yamahas coming through. And all of a sudden, the last two will be the two riders just roll up, thunk, and it will be 4K, ultra high def, glorious. All done in about 10 minutes. No. That's not what we were treated to at all.
Not at all. So what we got, I guess if any of you haven't watched it, all I can suggest is you just maybe go and watch 3 or 4 minutes of it and then turn it off. It's not worth watching more than 3 or 4 minutes. But the it's a terrible green screen effect that could have been, I'm sure, rendered on a PlayStation 2. It was awful.
It's definitely like an 8-bit Nintendo, whatever the first one was. I can't remember now.
I mean, the first Nintendo was a Nintendo.
That was the Nintendo Entertainment System, wasn't it? The NES.
Yes, exactly.
Which I've still got mine stashed in the loft.
That's worth some money now, Steve.
It's in the box as well.
Ooh, don't be telling people where you live, mate.
No, you've seen my armory. Don't worry.
But to be fair, it is a little bit... The CGI was a little bit higher quality than you'd have got on your NES, or even your SNES or your N64. It was kind of the high-end PS1 and PS2 level, wasn't it? But it was nothing that you and I couldn't do using just a basic computer today.
No, my laptop... Tim will vouch over here. I moan about my laptop every single week. I have to nurse it in health. just to do this podcast, literally. I was giving it CPR last week. I think I even sent you a message saying I'm just doing CPR on this.
That's literally what I said, yeah.
And I could have done it better on this thing.
Yeah.
It was disappointing, to say the least, from arguably one of the biggest teams in motorcycle racing. That was a massive letdown.
It really was, man. And I know everyone's budgets have been fucked because of COVID, but come on, lads. Like... KTM had done. Yamaha could watch KTM's 8 minutes of glory and they could have gone, shit, we fucked ours. Ours is going to be an hour of bullshit. Scrap it. It's not cost as much money anyway. Let's just do what they did. And that's what they should have done.
I completely agree. I mean, I liked some of the insightful little bits they were talking about, because I had Lynn Jarvis on there. One of the Monster Energy marketing directors across in America was on there. Loads of different people from Japan were on there. It was just too much.
It was too much, and it was boring, though. Like, it had a lot of interesting people on there, but I couldn't really watch it because I was just so bored of it. I just kept daydreaming, and I was in my own little world. It was too long. The CGI was distracting, and then I was feeling pretty angry about the whole situation that I'd wasted a lot of time watching it, and what do they go and fucking do? The bike's exactly the same. It literally hasn't changed. The livery, I thought it had changed a little. And I went earlier on today and had a look at the side-by-sides on MotoGP.com. It's actually exactly the same. There's no difference at all. I wasted an hour of my life watching crappy CGI, seeing this awkward, like, Maverick and Quartararo trying to act in this weird way that, why were they acting? Because it's just an interview. But yeah, they were very awkward. I imagine it's because they're just in a green room, aren't they? From what they're viewing, they're just standing in a green room. So they haven't got, they can't see the terrible CGI behind them. And I imagine it would be a bit weird if you and I were standing talking in a green room. It would feel a bit strange. But it was terrible, and I was so annoyed when I saw the bike was the same. The only nice thing is, at least it says 20 on the front and not 46, so it has changed a little bit.
I did find one little bit of change.
Oh, go on.
If you look at the screen, the bubble screen on the front.
But now it hasn't got Rossi's dogs on there.
No, it's just a different shade. It was more blue. It's now darker black going up the top of the screen. And if you look down the side of the fairing, just behind the front wheel, it's more black. We had the blue lines slashing back.
Yeah.
They're thinner.
Okay, so there is a slight change.
It's fucking minuscule.
Wasn't worth an hour of my life, Steve. That's what I'm going to say.
No, I did tell Yamaha what I thought on Twitter, as I showed you.
Yes, yeah, you did. I assume you didn't get a response.
No.
Anyway, I feel a bit like Yamaha did a terrible job and we've talked about them for a long time. KTM did a fucking great job and we've not really spoken about them much. So I just want to take my hat off to KTM. Best team launch you've ever seen. The KTM livery has always been stunning and the Tech 3 livery is the best thing that has ever graced a MotoGP bike, in my opinion.
I completely agree.
Shall we move on to the Johan Mir news?
Yes, let's get off of this before we spend the rest of the podcast on it.
Yeah, exactly. I think you and I have just been ranting at each other about this Yamaha launch for the last 3 days, or no, it's not been 3 days, but since it, however long ago it was, it feels like forever.
It does feel like a long time. It was only yesterday.
But there you go. You see, it's been like 36 hours maybe, and I feel like it's been days. That's how terrible it was. Moving on, Steve. Johan Mir announced that he will... We were just chatting, weren't we? We were chatting, he's made the announcement. Is he going to run the number one? Is he going to run the number 36? What are we going to have this year? And then, dun, 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 the announcement appears. Bring out the trumpets. It's the 36 plate.
I was quite gutted. I'm not surprised at all. Because like you said last week, it's a big PR thing now. It's your number. It's your number. I would really love to see someone just slap that number one on there and just roll out. I want the Conor McGregor of UFC to come into motorsport and just swagger it.
Can you imagine how ballsy it would be if Mir just came out first race of the year with a crown, a scepter, a red flowing cape behind him, number one plate, and they're like, what's going on? Are you going to win? He's like, I'm going to win everything. No one will stop me. That would be the best, man. That would be so good. I'd be so excited for that. Yeah.
Because if it was me, I'd just slap that number on that. I know people go on about, you don't want to lose face by, finishing 10th, 12th, 14th, whatever. I wouldn't care. I'm number one at the minute. Take it at the end of the year, whatever.
It's quite a surprise, isn't it, thinking about it? Like, we're just discussing this fun attitude that he could have, the Conor McGregor idea, that Lorenzo didn't go with the number one plate more often, because he's the guy, isn't he, from the last decade or two that's had that swagger, who's had the I am the best.
Yeah, he's got all that bravado and that, that pizzazz, that wow.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I don't know why. I just want to see someone rock up, It's Friday morning. Where is he? He's late. Helicopter. Middle of the circuit. I'm here.
Oh, mate, that would be so good, wouldn't it?
Proper rock and roll, Champagne bottles roll out the chopper.
I'd like to see him parachuting in James Bond style. He whips the parachute out and there's just the Spanish flag.
Yeah. Boom. Number one right down the middle.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so good. Oh, Steve, not only should you be writing Yamaha's presentations for them, you should also be choreographing Johan Mir's entry into every single race for the year.
All right, I'll tell him now.
if you just spun your camera there and he was next to you, I'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake, Steve. Like, why? Why do you not tell me these things?
Keeping everything a secret from Tim, secret relationships. That's all right. The rest of them are in the living room.
All your secret relationships.
Yes. They've just come to see the loud pants. That's all
it is. The loud pants. Nice. I was a bit confused, actually, Steve. We're getting off topic here, but I'm committed to it now. So, again, funny story. Cherie was using my phone. And we were planning our Tesco shop. We had this discussion last week. We know how important a Tesco shop is to me at the moment. And so Cherie's doing the shopping on my phone because that's just where the shop is. She doesn't have the app, blah, blah, blah. Not important. And then she's like, Tim, you've got a picture of pants just come through. I'm like, what? She's like, and a message that says, I like loud pants. I was like, right. Who's that from? She's like, I think you can guess. I was like, is it from Steve? She's like, yes, your boyfriend Steve. I was like, right. Is he sending me a picture of his pants? She's like, yes, strangely. I was like, are they on? She was like, no, they're just on the sofa. I'm like, okay, fair enough.
That's fine. Yeah. Well, she's not wearing them. Oh. That's what the Yamaha thing did to me yesterday. It blew my mind.
It blew your mind and made you put on your pants.
Yeah, literally. Fell asleep and shit myself as well.
Oh, dear. Let's move on. Mark, well, there's a headline, wasn't there, on MotoGP.com that read, Mark Marquez passes medical. And yes, there was. You drew my attention to this. I was like, whoa, medical? Is he going to be racing? I read the article that was maybe, I don't know, 3-4 paragraphs. And I feel like this might be MotoGP's most clickbaity, most misleading headline yet.
That got me big time. I read the headline. I was like, passes medical? Hang on, what have they been keeping from us? Is the infection gone? Is the arm healed? Is he going to be trained? Is he on a bike? What's going on?
Yeah.
And it was literally just to say basically that he passed the medical from the hospital to say that he could progress further through the treatment.
Yeah, it was essentially you're progressing exactly how we expected you to, and you've not taken a step backwards. So carry on, and we'll go from here.
Yeah, you are right. That is the most clickbaity headline I've ever seen, and it suckered me straight in.
Yeah, I mean, it got me too. You sent it to me, and you kind of essentially told me it was clickbaity, and I still clicked it. So there we go.
But it's such a big story.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? And they know that, and that's why they're going to get the clicks on it.
Exactly.
But it's highly unlikely we're going to see him at the start of the year. We might see him halfway through, but it's looking like Stephen Bradl's going to be on that bike for at least the first 5 or 6 races, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. This boy's got a long way to go. He did tweet, I think it was Instagram, put out a picture earlier of himself. I think he's sitting on a train or something. And that the shot comes in from like the left-hand side, and he's got his right arm up, and that arm looks small.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Has he got his bionic arm on there still?
No, bionic arm is gone.
Okay.
Bionic arm is gone. So I was going to see if I could find it quick. Why is he not first? That really blew my mind.
It's a bit strange, though, to think that he'd be... Well, I mean, it makes a lot of sense from him to post the pictures, doesn't it, of him on the train. To post, like, oh, look at my arm, it's doing good. But you'd also get your mate to just, like, put their fingers behind your arm and, like, make your bicep look a bit bigger, wouldn't you? Yeah. Just
give it a bit of hinge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, lean it against the window or something.
Yeah, he's just got down. Very natural pose. Let me show you. I'll have to bring up the other screen so you can see. He's just...
Oh, okay, so it's not even a tense or anything, it's just literally him sitting on a train, just chilling on his phone.
Yeah, very relaxed, very at ease. That's it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, it's good news that he's not got his bionic arm on anymore, and I assume...
Good sign.
Yeah, and so the infection looks like it's either healing or gone.
It's gone.
So I do wonder about this, though, Steve. He's going to have been out for 1.5 years by the time he comes back. Will he come back this season and win a race? We're going to get into this. We're going to do a prediction show, obviously, before the start of the year, before the start of the season, so we'll get into it properly. But quickly, yes or no now, Steve, will Marquez win a race this year if he comes back?
No.
No, he won't. Will Marquez ever win a championship again?
Yes.
Okay, cool. That's fine. We'll discuss that more deeply, I think, in our prediction show for the year. My opinions are a little different to you. I could see him maybe winning a race by the end of the year. I am unsure. I think another year out is going to fuck him. I don't think he'll be able to do a championship again. I hope I'm wrong, because I'm actually going to be rooting for him when he comes back. It's been this weird turnaround where he's going to come back and I'm going to be like, come on, Mark, come on. Yeah,
I think a lot of people are going to be the same, because everyone's hearing the same thing. Everyone's following social media because we're all off. We've got more time to dig into this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all becoming like mini reporters. Just, we want all the information we can just thrown at us through social media and on the TV. I wouldn't be surprised. No, let's not do this. Do we save this for the prediction show?
Oh, we've started now, mate. Just go for it.
All right. I think he will come back, give it his all, but it will be like a big training session aiming for next year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
I don't think he's going to risk coming back 100% and pushing at 100%, like we've seen him push before. I think he's going to come back, and it's going to be do what you can do, don't risk yourself. But at the same time, I think the training he's going to be doing behind the scenes is going to be intense.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. And I imagine he'll be able to get podiums and stuff, won't he? Even if he comes back halfway through the season, he'll land on the podium at some point.
Yeah, I could be completely wrong. He comes out of the blocks, big guns, but I could see it being a build up for next year. You know, he's had so long out, let's push what you can this year. You've then got the off season as well to recoup even more, do a bit of motocross, whatever, get yourself physically fit, and then let's come back next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I can still see him winning a race. I can't see him coming out of the blocks and winning, but I think he'll want to win a race by the end of the year just to put his stamp on it, to be like, look, I am here and I will be back. Yeah. And 2022 is my year. And 2022, whereas the moment he's got his leg back over that bike this year or for the full season next year, I will be rooting for him. I don't think I'm alone here, but I think this 18 months out or whatever it will be by the time it's done, might be one of the best things that happens to Marc Marquez's brand from a global perspective point of view. Because I think a lot of people, just like me, who were very bored of, although I enjoyed watching Marquez win because we're watching history, we were up until this point watching him overtake Valentino Rossi very quickly to become the greatest of all time. He was on track, and you and I had different opinions on whether he was going to break Ago's records or not. But we were on track to be seeing, like, oh my God, this guy is amazing. But we were also fed up with that because we wanted to see someone else win. And then it was taken away from us. And then all of a sudden, I can't be alone in thinking that, oh my God, it's been snatched from me. I wanted to see that. As much as I was fed up with it, I wanted to see it continue. So I think I might go out and buy a Marc Marquez t-shirt when he comes back.
Oh, absolutely. I'm definitely going to buy one. 100%. There's going to be those little ants everywhere.
That's just the British summer, mate. Let's use the poison down.
That is true. Speaking of, I've just, something has just clicked in my head. I'm just going to have to write it down because I need to show you after the show. Something just popped in there. I just need to remember it. That's all.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, while you write that down, I will move on to the news about the Yamaha satellite team then, shall we?
Yep, do that.
Okay, cool. So we saw the news. It was sort of a weirdly announced that Yamaha will be talking to both Petronas and the VR46 squad to run their satellite team going forwards. It kind of looks like Petronas have been talking to Suzuki anyway. Petronas seemed to want out from Yamaha. The bike that gave them 6 wins last year, they're kind of like, fuck this, we don't want this. They won more races than anyone else on the Yamaha. This is Petronas, obviously. Won more races on the Yamaha than anyone else. And they still don't want to be a part of that organisation anymore. It's interesting. And, you know, we were discussing whether... you actually sent me the picture, didn't you, of the VR46 logo on the Yamaha factory shirts. And we were wondering, we were riffing back and forth, oh shit, maybe this is the deal done. Maybe they haven't told us, but maybe this is just, we now know that Yamaha is going to straight away be on the VR46 squad. And then I did some more reading, Steve, and literally 4 minutes after I'd sent the show notes across to you, I stumbled across this belter here, and that's that VR46 have become the official clothing supplier to the Monster Yamaha team. So they'll have their logo on there because they're providing all of their clothes and all of their kit.
I still believe it's already a done deal. And I think, now you've said about Petronas talking to Suzuki, that sort of just, not solidifies, but works in very well, just forms the last pieces of what I was thinking. Mm. I'm sure it's a done deal. And I'm sure Petronas are talking to Suzuki because they're getting a sweat on because of the VR46 brand coming in. I'm pretty sure it's already done. If you look at Luca Marini's Ducati livery, it's getting so close to the current factory Yamaha.
Funny thing, you should say that. So I was listening to the race MotoGP podcast earlier, and they were saying that the guy who designed the Yamaha factory livery is the same guy that designed the VR46 livery. Adrian Drudy, is it? Adrian Drudy?
Yeah, I'm sure it's Drudy. There's too many coincidences in all this. Too many, just, it's too close. I think we could have been, not duped, but I think a lot of this chessboard has already been played out further afield than we realised. And I think we're down to the last couple of pieces and you've only got a couple of moves left before you checkmate.
I wouldn't actually be surprised, you know, if Petronas had known this all along. Petronas came in knowing it was just going to be 2 years with Yamaha. They knew that the whole time. and that they would have to find something else elsewhere. And maybe Suzuki, who have been talking about a satellite team, also knew this. Maybe this has been, like you say, maybe this has been planned out. And I know we've, this is not what I was saying even 2 weeks ago on the show. I was quite on board with the idea of a VR46 Suzuki squad. But yeah, I think actually you've got it here. I think this is, has been known for a long time, and I think the teams have known for a long time. And even if it's not been official for a long time, it's kind of been one of those gentlemen's agreements.
Yeah, it would sort of work in well with why Rossi hasn't taken his mechanics across to Petronas as well. Leave them there. They'll work in the factory. Rossi will be in the satellite team, which will eventually become his team. A whole new setup. The Petronas guys will then ship out to Suzuki. So you won't want Rossi's people to go from factory to Petronas and then off to Suzuki, they say.
Yeah, it's true, because this is what Edward Rose, wasn't it, chatting with him a couple of weeks ago, was it last week, week before, and that was that maybe that the VR46, or Rossi's crew hadn't gone because Yamaha were aware that that Suzuki would end up with them, if not.
That's exactly what I think has happened. I think we're all now starting to piece it together, and it's becoming quite clear that it's there, it's a done deal, and we will see the Petronas as VR46. And Petronas Suzuki's running the satellite team.
See, it's all going to be fun, Steve. We'll find out sooner rather than later, I think. It's not going to take us long to get through this, I think.
No, but then thinking about it as well, just carrying on this on, just a little something that's popped in here as well. It would also explain why in the Sponsorama team, you've got Aventia still there as a title sponsor. So they will just liquidate Luca Barini's side of the garage back into their own, and you've still got enough money there to do it, to run full teams, because they've been doing it in the past.
But it will be that grid slot that's going to the VR46 squad, won't it?
Luca's spot.
Well, no, the entire Aventia grid slot will become the VR46 squad.
Oh, yes, it will. Sorry. Yeah. Yes, it will. Yeah. Unless they're going to be part of it.
I don't think they will be. I think it's quite clear that they want out, don't they? Well, they don't want out. I think that Dorna wants them out, and the rest of the group sort of want them out. And I imagine Ducati want them out, because Ducati don't want to keep providing six bikes when everyone else is providing two or four.
Yeah, exactly. If they could bring that down, then they're all on par then. Apart from Aprilia, everyone's got four bikes on the grid.
Yeah, exactly. And we know that the Gresini squad is going to be its own team come 2023.
Yes.
Or is it 2022?
I think it'll be 2022, actually. So Aprilia will be its own standalone thing.
Yeah, I mean, if Aprilia are going to stay on the grid, then they're going to have to become their own factory squad. And that is assumed, isn't it? But I don't know if that has been confirmed at all.
I don't think anything's been said about that yet.
Okay.
That's quite interesting. But we will see. It's not going to be too long before we find out.
No, it certainly won't be long at all.
We're going to get an answer this year, so they're not going to keep us waiting that long, are they? No. Surely.
It's one of these things, though, isn't it, that every week I'm going back and forth on it. And like I say, when Edwards came up with his idea that the VR46 squad will be Suzuki in the future, I was very behind that. And now I'm looking at the evidence he presented, and I've swapped my mind on that, and I'm going the other way. I feel like I'm getting very hung up on weird conspiracies in MotoGP.
It is becoming a very Area 51 sort of go-to conspiracy theorist highway at the minute.
Yeah, it really is.
It's, you know, we're in UFO alley here. The alien's back.
Yeah, and I certainly feel a bit like I'm changing the evidence just to fit whatever my belief that week is. So
I do that. I do that all the time.
Yeah, so I really don't know what's going to happen. I'm having fun riffing on it, and we'll just see what happens, I think. It's just going to be
really
fun to experience. And whatever I say, if I get it right, happy days, I got it right. If I get it wrong, which is more likely, I had fun getting it wrong. So that's the important thing.
Exactly. We're just here for a good old yarn.
Exactly, my friend. So one more before we get on to the actual show, Steve. The COVID wedding for the year. And COVID wedding's probably a mean term for it, I suppose. But Maverick Vinales has gone and got married.
He did get himself hitched. Bless him. Kept it nice and quiet. Lovely.
Yeah, I knew nothing about this. I was actually thinking, to be fair, during the team launch, that Maverick Vinales finally looks like he's grown up a bit. He looks much less like the Paris Hilton-sponsored child that he once was. And he now actually looks like quite the attractive young man, I think we should say.
And he's definitely matured in this off-season.
He certainly has.
He got more tattoos.
Did he get more tattoos? I was just looking at his jawline, to be honest.
No, he's got more tattoos. Someone put a picture on Twitter that, you know, Quartararo's got quite a few, and Vinales has added to his collection.
I was going to say, if Quartararo is coming in as my teammate, I'd be like, fuck, I feel very inferior. I need some more tattoos now.
Yeah, that's all right. Can it just popped his head around the corner and it's like, fuck off.
Yeah, well, can it? What skin's he fucking got left?
Big two. That's about it.
Yeah, if that. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he's got the whole bottom of his feet done as well.
He did an Instagram live the other day, and it's like up onto his jaw.
Yeah.
Under his neck. And I was like, man, that must be painful.
Can you imagine how great it would be? We just spoke about a few minutes ago how we'd like Mir to come in like the king of MotoGP and be really pretentious with it. How great would it be if Canet came into MotoGP as the villain but was fully tattooed to the literally to the eyeballs? How great would it be to have a fully tattooed villain, black eyes and just no normal skin left? I would really get behind that.
Hell yes, I'm all game for that. The tattoo squad, let's have it.
That would be great fun. I'd really enjoy that. But yes, Maverick Vinales married. My COVID wedding joke, just, you know, I assume it was COVID safe. And Maverick did do a lot of work throughout COVID, didn't he? Helping local charities and stuff. So I'm going to assume it wasn't the dangerous event that we've been seeing constantly in the UK. But congratulations, Mav. Hope everything goes well for you. That's our news touched on, Steve. Shall we take a quick break and then dive into the actual topic of our show, which we are yet to even mention the man's name, but it is our final introduction to the rookies in Enea Bastianini. So as we've spent the last however many weeks, we will run through the guy's career, what he's done so far, and how we think he'll do next year in MotoGP.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's have a quick break and then dive into Bastianini.
Good stuff. Right, bear with us, guys. We'll be back in a moment. Thank you for bearing with us there, guys. I got a fresh beer.
Nice.
And Steve had a banana. So you can see the two of us are, one of us is living a very healthy, sensible life, and the other one is not. But that's the breakdown, and I've got the beer, and Steve's eaten, and now we're here to discuss the life and career of one Enea Bastianini. He arrives in MotoGP this year with the Avintia squad as the reigning Moto2 champion. He is going to be alongside Luca Marini. But how did he get here? Never fear, Steve and I will tell you.
We will read you this life story.
Read you his life story. Maybe we should start Ryan biography, Steve. I think
maybe
we should. That.
The first, when we do this, I don't know if you'll remember, there used to be a show on British TV called This Is Your Life.
Oh, with a big red book.
The massive red book. And this dude would come out and like have his guest come on, he'd sit down and he'd open the book up and just go for it. And he'd find like friends from 30, 40 years ago, wouldn't he? Just dig them out of the dust. And, you know, the bloke who's sitting there was like, for fuck's sake, hated that twat back then.
And it was always celebrities, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was always celebrities.
It wasn't just like John from down the road.
No, they didn't like get that desperate. They'd wandered into Tesco's and went, hey, mate. What'll be on telly?
Yeah, I think
the bloke at Tesco's gone, no, mate, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't be on telly, son. Can't be on telly.
I don't know how well that story translates across anywhere else outside of the UK, actually, because I don't know if they have This Is Your Life, and I don't actually know if Tesco's exists anywhere else. I've spoken about Tesco's a lot recently, but I don't know if it exists anywhere outside of the UK, to be honest.
I'm sure most countries must have that variant of some sort of...
Oh, wait, it does. I've been to a Tesco in Thailand. It was Tesco Lotus. It was green.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's all over the world. I'm just being a fucking idiot, mate. Let's move on, shall we?
That'd be that fifth beer. He's thrown him.
That will be the fifth beer. The fifth beer that I actually opened for the sound effects, but because I'm still halfway through the fourth, I'm not yet drinking it. I just committed to the nice sound effect, which now I'm feeling a bit upset about.
Drink it.
So obviously I'm going to drink it, Steve. It's just now I have to drink it quickly so it doesn't go flat.
Peer pressure in one.
Oh God, no, just shotgun it. I know it's already open. I can't shotgun it. Anyway.
It'll go down quicker.
Yeah, Cherie is the master at that. I've never met anyone that can strawpedo a drink like Cherie can. It's incredible. When we first met and we were going out like clubbing and stuff, because that's what you do before you realize how expensive and terrible it is, the amount of free drinks she used to win me at the bar, because I'd be like, look boys, here it is. I was like, I will buy this round of drinks if any of you can beat Cherie in a strawpedo contest. There'd be like five lads there. And they'd be like, oh, go on then. I'm like, okay. So we'd put the money down. And I'd be like, but if Cherie wins, one of you boys buys the entire round. They're like, fair enough. So we get the seven drinks. Obviously, we know the barman in town, so he's happy to let us do this wager before we have to hand money over.
Nice.
And I never once had to buy a round. Cherie is on point with the strawpedos. On point.
Good girl.
Very good. Although she would probably be the first to confess she hasn't done a strawpedo now in probably 3 or 4 years, so maybe wouldn't be as good as she once was. But still, I would put money on her being able to beat me or you any day.
Nice. Like it. I sort of have semi-given up drinking, so yeah, she'd win hands down.
Right, anyway. Off my drinking habits and Cherie's drinking habits. And on to Enea Bastianini. Born the 30th of December, 1997. Very close, actually, to being in 1998. I hadn't realised quite how close, but was born once again in the same year as Valentino Rossi won his first 125 title.
Children.
Quite. And being a child did not stop Enea Bastianini doing much, because at just 3 years and 3 months old, he rode his first mini bike. That 33 might seem familiar. That's his race number, 33. And that is why, because he rode his first mini bike at 3 years and 3 months.
Very poetic. I like it.
Yeah, it's a nice one, isn't it? Like, I quite like this when numbers really do mean something, because you see it a lot throughout. Like, they have a number that's pretty cool for a little while, then they just change it.
Yeah.
Like, Lorenzo was 48, wasn't he, when he came into MotoGP?
Yes.
Maverick Vinales was 25.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, we've seen quite a few changes, actually, over the years, haven't we?
Yeah, so it does happen. It happens a lot of the time because they arrive, like, they'll have a number in Moto2, but then they'll come up to MotoGP and someone's already got that number.
Yeah, exactly. So if that it's happens taken, a lot. It's taken.
Yeah, I think that's what happened with Miguel Oliveira, wasn't it? He was 44 in Moto2, and then he came up to MotoGP, but there was already a 44 in Pol Espargaró, so he became the 88.
Yeah.
So that's quite normal.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's bound to happen.
Yeah, but I like the ones that mean something, like the 33. I like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah. If it got a bit of mean, a bit of sentiment.
Although he's not going to be a 33 next year, is he? Because Brad Binder's the 33.
Oh, that's very, very true. Let's go into...
we're going to have to look at the Esponsorama team launch now to see what number he's got on the front of the bike.
That is a good point. Enea.
Because obviously Brad Binder's 33 is really nice because it looks like two Bs. So,
23.
He's gone for the 23. Okay, well, there we go. See, it's a good job we riff on this, Steve, because otherwise I'd have just read out the fact and moved on. But that's not the case today. So he will be the 23.
Yes, yeah. EB 23. Oh, I see where he's gone with that.
Okay, so then, on his way to the World Championships, obviously, as we have discussed with every other rider so far, he won absolutely everything. He crushed the Honda HRP 100cc trophy. He won the Mini GP 70cc trophies. He won everything you can imagine on a mini bike. And in 2012... at just, let's get this right here, 15 years old, he took the Honda RS125 trophy.
Yeah, it was no slouch, that boy.
No, but it's like we've said, isn't it? Like, they're all like this. All of their careers up until this point, you don't hit the international stage without winning everything else beforehand.
No, that's it. You have to dominate everything you go into. And, like, I'm sure we've had this conversation before where you look at the age, 3 years, 3 months. That's younger than my boy, my eldest boy. You know, they do seem to start the kids racing younger on the continent. In the UK, I think it's about 10, 8, 9, 10, maybe. There's probably some private tracks where you could get time out there. And there might be a few series now that are going a bit younger. But they definitely start the racing younger or getting them used to balance bikes, etc. A lot younger on the continent. So I'm moving.
Yeah, it's quite well accepted, isn't it, that like British riders come into their own a little bit later. You're probably not going to hit your prime as a British rider until 25, 26, kind of like the age Jake Dixon is now in Moto2, whereas like a lot of guys from Spain and Italy will be hitting that kind of period at 21, 22.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is a big chunk. And a lot of it is just the difference. Like, there's not as many young British riders about, and maybe I don't know what the track laws and stuff are, but maybe that is the case. It's just you're not allowed to ride until a certain age in the UK.
Yeah, I think that could be the case. Saying that, well, Enzo's nearly four. I guess I better get him on a bike.
Yeah, mate, fucking hurry up about it.
I have looked. I have looked. They're not cheap, but I'm on
They're not cheap, sadly.
No, they're not cheap. But I'm doing my best. He doesn't know this yet, but he will be champion.
And if he's not, you've still got another couple of years. The other one, mate, it's fine.
Yeah, Brody's the daredevil. 9 months old, he's already flying around the place.
There you go. Maybe he's the champ you need. Maybe let Enzo be the mechanic.
Maybe. Yeah, he does like taking things apart, actually. You can't leave anything sitting around for too long, so he'll start bashing it and taking it apart.
See, there you go. You've got the line up there. It's sorted.
Sorted. Just need a couple more. Pit crew. Right, I've got to go. I've got something to do.
Shit, I'm doing the rest of the show solo. So anyway, 2013, we saw Andrea Bastianini join Red Bull Rookies. Pretty good opening season in the Red Bull Rookies. He took two wins, finished fourth with 148 points.
Pretty good. If you're going to step it up to the full time, fourth place finish for your first time out or first end of the first season, not bad at all.
No, not bad at all. And he also took part in five rounds of the CIV Moto3 Championship. I assume that was to get used to Moto3 machinery.
I would have thought so, yeah. Just to give you a little taste, a little snippet. You've got to transition slowly, haven't you? No point just going big guns. And you've got to do that little wild card just to give it a go.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, we see the weird thing like we saw with Chan Onchu, don't we? You come in one wet race, you dominate, you win. Oh my God, everyone's talking about you. And then you do a whole year without scoring points. Well, exactly. I mean, he did score points, but you get my point.
Yeah, he didn't, you know, if you're going to do that one-off wonder like he did, bless him, and then because of that sensation, everyone's going to think you're like a demigod and you're going to keep doing it every race. Not always the case. You've got to just tease it. Just have a go, have a try.
Yeah.
Just, you know, dip your water in that, dip your foot in the water and just see how cold it is.
Got a feeling in my waters. I better dip them in something.
That's like something my nan would say.
That's Jesus. Exactly what I thought when you said it. I was like, that's a very old person thing to say.
I am old, mate. I'm not getting old.
So 2014 saw Andrea Bastianini move full-time into the Moto3 World Championship with the Go and Fun Grassini squad.
I remember that bike. I used to really like their livery as well.
Well, it was through every class, wasn't it? Because they had obviously the Bautista rode the Go and Fun Grassini Honda at the time.
Yeah, I just like the livery, the look obviously. Of it. Yeah, just like the look of it. Remember that bike? Well, I remember reading all his career notes. I was like, Christ, yeah, the Go and Fun.
Yeah. All about that. Yeah, it used to be everywhere, that Go and Fun. I don't even know who Go and Fun were or what they were, why they had so much money to pump into motorcycle sponsorship, but they did, and it was a nice green livery.
Yeah, looked good.
But he had a good rookie campaign that year. He, out of the, oh shit, I didn't write down how many races, 2014, 17 races? 18
races. I'm sure it was 18 races.
Okay, so an 18 race season. He scored points in 17 of those races. One finish outside the points, the other two were DNFs. And he did score three podiums in his rookie year. So finished the season in ninth with 127 points and was rookie of the year, as you'd sort of expect with those stats.
Pretty damn good.
Yeah, a really solid, a really solid rookie entry into the class. I mean, he didn't come up as Red Bull rookie champ. No. He finished fourth in Red Bull rookies. So to come up, be rookie of the year, score some podiums in that year, like that's a fucking solid result. Happy days.
That is setting him up really, really nicely, because that sort of result is going to set eyes on you straight away.
Yeah.
You know,
and he did come in. Do you remember how much hype there was about him when he first came in? And the Beast and Bestia is his nickname, isn't it? The Beast in Italian. There was a lot of hype around him.
There was, yeah. I think everyone had been watching him come through all these championships, and because he had literally dominated so much, You know, and he's got a good nickname. And people remember that. You come in the Beast. Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Quartararo thing, isn't it? Because Quartararo, remember how well hyped he was when he took a step up into Moto3?
Yeah, yeah. Every now and again, you get someone come through like this, and everyone's like, watch this guy, watch this guy. They're going to be amazing. And they're not wrong. Well, these guys know what they're talking about. When they see a talent, they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, certainly.
You know where Quartararo is now, look what Anaya's doing now. They're both in the big time now.
Yeah.
So they're not wrong. All right, sometimes they take a little while to maybe get to grips every now and again. They're going to have a bad season, but they're never really that wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, he's setting himself up nicely already for the future.
Exactly. So that brings us forward to 2015. 2015, he was still in Moto3, still with the Gresini squad. But Gresini moved from the KTMs to Hondas.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty great season again. He was the only person in the early part of the season that could hold a candle to Danny Kent. And we know Danny Kent in that early part of the season just went on a stormer. And it was quite a fun thing. Again, for Brits, I think for you and I, Steve, watching Danny Kent in Moto3 was quite fun. It was like, fuck, like our first GP champion or Grand Prix champion since Barry Sheen. Oh my God, look at what he's doing. This is amazing. We didn't realise he would later get done for knife crime, but that's sort of irrelevant. At the time, it was great to watch.
The bloke went on a hell of a tear, didn't he? I can remember that season, and it was just like, what's he going to do this week?
Well, it was only for the early part of the season, wasn't it? The first half, and then after that, it was just, fuck me, Danny Kent, nurse this point. You've got an 80-point lead here. Like, nurse it to the finish, because he very nearly didn't win. Like, yeah, Oliveira ran close. Him to the last round.
Yeah, I don't know what he did where he burnt out really early. He just gave up big guns. It's almost like he had one tyre for the entire year and he gave up the balls at the start and just burnt it out halfway through and then just couldn't get any traction in the second half. And like we were getting seriously worried. Like, hang on, at one point, it looks like he's just going to throw the whole thing away.
That's a really nice analogy, actually, with a tyre. Just because it was like he put everything into the early part of the season and then just couldn't get it together in the second half. Because I remember at one point he had a weird crash where he was, I can't remember what track it was. I can't even remember which direction the corner was in. But he was leaning out of the corner, pulled the throttle on, and before he was even upright, he was wheeling and threw himself off the back of the bike. Like he had some weird crashes that year.
Was that didn't something give on the bike, like electronics, where the traction control went or something, but the back tyre actually dug? Instead of like low siding out from under him, because he was starting to pick the bike up, the back wheel actually dipped and gripped. So that's
the only explanation, isn't it? Yeah. It didn't have to be an electronics failure to have a crash like that.
Sure, that was. I could be thinking of someone different. But yeah, it was just like an insane crash. And it just sort of summed up the second half of his year. It's like, how the hell are you doing this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But in the early part of the year, it was really only Bastianini that could even hold a candle to Danny Kent.
Yeah.
He scored top 10 finishes in all but two rounds across the year, took six podiums, one of which was a race in Misano. And it was only at the end of the year when Oliveira really got his shit together that Bastianini slipped down to third place in the title. But it was 207 points, third place.
Awesome. Can't ask for more. Definitely going in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. And it was looking great, looking really good. And he came into 2016 as essentially the championship favourite. I think you would have been silly to bet against him. But he didn't score a podium until the seventh round of the year in Catalunya. Go on to score five podiums throughout the season, one of which was a win. But the early part seriously let him down. I mean, he did finish the championship in second place on 177 points, which is weird. It's weird to think he finished higher up with less points.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what went on this season.
Brad Binder happened this season. Do you remember Brad Binder went on a tear and won like 10 races across the year?
That's the one. Yes, no one could touch him because they were just like Binder, 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 Binder.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the end of it, we were like, oh, Binder. Yeah, okay.
This, to be fair, that was the year I really fell for Brad Binder, I think. Yeah. And I've not got over, like, the year before, I was a big Oliveira fan. 2016, I also became a big Brad Binder fan. And I've been a big fan of both of those throughout the rest of their career since. And they've always been KTM teammates together. And lo and behold, they've done it
again. Here they are. So Morbidelli is going to have competition for Tim's affection this year.
Oh, Morbidelli's a much more attractive man than either Brad Binder or Oliveira. And I feel like Morbidelli would be a nicer lover. I think Brad Binder wouldn't be a friendly lover, in my opinion. He'd be a nice guy to go out for a drink with, I think, but you wouldn't want more than a drink from him. And Oliveira's a married man, so, you know, you wouldn't want to consider that.
Oh, he is a married man, actually, isn't he? I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Could be a CD affair for you.
Me and the KTM boys on a weird night in Bangkok.
Jesus. Like something out of a Hangover movie. Anyway, let's get out of here quick.
So Bastianini also 2016, he did miss two rounds due to injury, but to be fair, even if he'd won both of those, he'd have still been 100 points shy of Binder for the title. So
yeah, at that point it's not really worth worrying about, is it?
No, exactly. Like, it's just a weird year, isn't it? It's the weird scenarios that happen in Grand Prix racing sometimes. And we've just guessed, I just made some noises and thought they were words, but actually they were just noises. But as we've just discussed, Brad Binder was the reason that it was a weird year. He went on a tear, he won a shitload of races. But it's just a weird scenario that you can score... how many less points did he score? He scored 30 points less than the year before. And still finished a place higher in the championship. So it's still one of those weird facts of racing.
It's just one of those weird end results in it where everyone else has been in the same boat, essentially. So it's just a weird, weird point-scoring finish. And you've had one person go on a tear, so they've run away with it, which makes everyone look even worse.
Yeah, exactly. So 2017, we saw Bastianini. So I guess until this point, we've seen an improvement in results.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen an improvement in finishing position, certainly. And there's a weird argument for the 2016 year. Did he improve? Did he not improve? Like, what actually happened? Like, how does that deal with your physical, like your mental state as a rider? Because I don't know how I'd deal with that. I really don't. And you want to see a constant progression. And this sort of was a constant progression, but also sort of wasn't.
Yeah, it's a weird sort of situation where you've improved, but you haven't improved. So you need to sort of pick apart the statistics of it, don't you? Just pull apart where you've improved, because there's definitely an improvement, but there's also something that's given a way to make you have less points.
Yeah.
So you've got to pull apart both. You need a data analyst to just plug into you and just pull it apart and just review it and then come back to you with like, right, here's what you've got to do.
You need to go see Morpheus, plug into the Matrix, work out what the fuck is going on.
That's it. Don't take the blue pill. you know, and if you meet Neo, fucking get out of his way.
Yeah, certainly. It's not worth it. And Agent Smith, don't fight him. Just run.
Yeah, just literally leg it. Don't go down the highway, the pavement, or anything. Just go underground. Go into hiding, for God's sake. And if you see that Jet Li character, dude, run like fuck.
So 2017, Bastianini left the Gresini Racing squad and moved over to the Australia Galizia Honda team. The Australia Galizia team we know is a great team. They have produced world champions in the past.
They have.
They're constant race winners almost every year. A really, really solid team. And after, like we say, we'd seen a progression in his finishing positions. So it's kind of it, isn't it? You're like, whoa, come on. This is the year now, Bastianini. If you can drop the bullshit start you had last year, you've got no Brad Binder to deal with now. You can do this. Come on. However, he scored 3 podiums across the year and finished 6th place with 141 points.
The only thing I can think of it, the reason for this is it had to be the team move. That's the only thing I can think of, because everything's going swimmingly, almost. Until this point.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he moves teams and it stagnates. Or it doesn't even stagnate. He goes downhill again.
Well, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because arguably with points and finishes, he went downhill the year before as well. It's only because everyone else also went downhill that he scored up. The 2016 year really fucks the history of Bastianini because it's a hard one to work out.
Yeah, it's just that fly in the ointment, isn't it? All of a sudden, you're going for it. An analyst would just go, I don't know, we'll just not worry about that. Because I do believe somewhere on one website I was reading that they actually leave out these 2 years. And then
literally Wikipedia
leaves
out these 2 years for some reason.
That's because they couldn't work it out. They're still there going, fuck it. Easiest way around this, just acknowledge that, you know, he jumped in the DeLorean and just went to the future.
Yeah, exactly. He hit 88 miles an hour, got struck by lightning, and here we are. He's on a Leopard Honda in 2018.
Yeah, he's just like, fuck it, easy. everyone else has sat down on Wikipedia. Some bloke's gone, right, I'm going to add my entry here. Nah, fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, nah, I've got a takeaway coming soon. I can't bother with this.
Yeah, it's take too long. My dissertation would take less time.
Yeah.
You could argue the year before 2016 was a dip or a blip, whatever. But we see this quite often with a lot of riders, don't we? They have a year or two where it's not quite on the up. Things start to stagnate and they just need to pull their heads together and just work out what's going on. And I think these, like especially here, highlighted 2017, 2018, are where it shows a lot of maturity as well to keep plugging and then keep going and get the result, not even better results, but just keep pushing to get good results.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's probably quite unusual, isn't it? And I don't know if it is. I think it's unusual to get 2 years of... Nah, because in both those years, he still finished top 10s, top 6s, didn't he, in the season? So it's not that unusual. But I was going to say, it's hard for a rider, I think, to have 2 years of bad results and then move and still have a ride. But these are comparative bad results to his previous results, but they're still better than more than half the field, more than three quarters of the field. So Arguably, even if he has bad results and finishes sixth, he's still faster than, you know, at least 14 to 24 guys behind him. So
exactly. This is where that scout who first spotted him at the age of four is still sat there going, right, give him a Moto2 ride and this guy will just come into his own. It's that
exactly.
Talent. It's the Hervé effect, isn't it?
Yeah,
where
it
you
is.
Could sit there and this guy could be crashing every weekend and you could go, right, stick him on that bike and he's golden.
Yeah. That's it. But before he gets his Moto2 ride, he does one more year in Moto3, and that's the 2018 year. And he's moved to the Leopard Honda squad. Now, this is an interesting team because Leopard, obviously, they won with Johan Mir the year before.
Yes.
And now let's try and get this right. The Leopard KTM, which I believe was a different team, but exactly the same colours and livery, won with Danny Kent in 2015.
I believe you're right, yes.
But I think it was a different team. I think it's just the sponsorship moved over. However, it's still arguably, you know, we saw a really solid team win a shitload of races.
We did, yes. I remember the sort of sky turquoisey blue.
The turquoise one, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, really nice looking bike, that. Really did like that one.
So he had 60 DNFs that really marred what was otherwise a great season. The 12 finishes that he took were all in the top eight.
Yeah.
Six of those finishes was on the podium and one of them was a win. So, you know, out of your point scoring position, imagine if he didn't have those six DNFs, man. Like, that title would have been his that year.
Absolutely. Those little bits, those six races are just a real big, not even the fly. That's the elephant in the ointment.
Yeah,
You know, that is a huge chunk of points to lose because it would have been his. And like you say, the rest of the race is top eight. I mean, if you could finish, go for a season, there's not many riders in Moto3 who can say, right, I finished top eight every single race that I competed in.
Exactly, and 50% of my finishes were on the podium.
Exactly. That is a huge, huge accolade to come off the back of, what, two pretty shitty years.
Yeah.
And then jump on this bike again, a different team again. And just through this, this is the point where everyone's looked up and gone, actually, he is worth it.
Yeah, exactly. He scored 177 points across the year. And that was exactly the same, actually, as his 2016 total. But he finished fourth overall instead of second. And according to his own website, now I couldn't find this anywhere else except his own website. But I kind of believe it after I saw the numbers that he holds the highest number of Moto3 podiums out of anyone at 24.
That I can imagine is true. I didn't look on his own website actually for any info.
It's very badly translated. It's one of it's a Google Translate job. It's quite hard for us to actually glean much from it because neither you or I can speak Italian.
No, that's probably something we should try and do.
Italian, if I was going to learn another language and actively try and learn another language, it would be Spanish over Italian, I think.
Yeah, that's probably a good shout. Paella, San Miguel.
Paella.
Paella. Whatever. San Miguel, Spanish, done. There we go.
Is San Miguel Spanish? I don't think San Miguel's Spanish.
That's probably not. I've just landed myself in right hot water with a load of Spanish people.
Let's find out where it comes from. San Miguel.
Please be Spanish.
San Miguel. No, it's Filipino.
What?
Yeah, according to the Wikipedia entry for San Miguel beer, San Miguel refers to San Miguel Pale Pilsen, a Filipino pale lager produced by San Miguel Brewery, a subsidiary of San Miguel Corporation, established in 1890 by the original San Miguel Brewery, renamed the San Miguel Corporation. It's the largest selling beer in the Philippines and Hong Kong. Yes, so it's Filipino.
Whatever.
It arrived in Spain in 1946. Estrella Galicia is, Estrella is Spanish, yeah.
Oh, that's right. We'll stick to that. They sell that in the goat down the road.
Yeah, I'm not actually a big fan of Estrella.
Are you not? Oh, I love it.
No. It's nice. It's a nice lager, but I'm kind of like, if I'm going out for drinking now, I don't tend to drink lager. I tend to drink a lot of ales. I've become that guy. I spent a lot of my life just drinking lager. And I mean, I'm literally drinking lager as we speak. But like when I go to the pub and stuff, I always used to drink lager. And I always had the old boys in there being like, oh, there's an ale out there for everyone. You just haven't found it yet. And I was like, all right, fucking granddad, deal with it. Turns out Grandad was right, because there is an ale out there for everyone. In the same way, there's a coffee out there for everyone, and I'm pretty convinced there's a whiskey out there for everyone, but I'm yet to find mine.
Whiskey? Bourbon. I'm going to have to go to the shop.
There you go, you see. We did have a message about drinking whiskey, didn't we?
We did, yes. Where was it? Adam. I often enjoy a few Jack Daniels whilst listening, so you aren't alone, Tim.
And that's what I like to hear. I like to know I'm not the only person that is that's drinking too heavily in their general life.
I think the last time I actually had any alcohol was when we did the out of date show, when we were both drinking out of date wine or whatever it was.
I was drinking out of date wine. You were drinking out of date Pimm's, I believe, Steve.
That's it. Something I dug out of the cupboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that three shows ago?
Two or three. It was a little while ago.
Yeah. Since then, that's the last time alcohol touched these lips.
Let's move on, Steve. 2019, Bastianini moves up into Moto2 with the Ital Trans squad. This is a race-winning team. Matteo Pessini rode for these guys for a long time and was maybe not a consistent title threat, but a consistent podium threat throughout the year.
Oh, absolutely.
So definitely a good team moving up with an Italian team, which obviously helps. Italian is obviously their first language, so very easy to communicate with your crew.
Yeah, makes it easier.
And the first season in Moto2 was a pretty solid season, actually.
Not bad.
Apart from the 6 non-scores, two of which were retirements, one was did not start, so three of them were just finishing outside of points.
Yeah.
He was in the points for every single race, and he did score a podium in Brno. So it's a solid rookie season. He was unfortunate, I think, to miss out on Rookie of the Year. Fabio Di Giantonio beat him by 11 points to Rookie of the Year on the speed up.
Yeah, that is a good, good year. I mean, Moto2 is a big jump up from Moto3, as MotoGP is from Moto2. So
yeah, but a lot of people say, don't they, that the the Moto3 to Moto2 is a bigger jump than Moto2 to MotoGP.
Yeah, I think especially now where the electronics are so close to a MotoGP bike in a Moto2 bike, they've sort of got a little bit closer, haven't they?
Certainly, and that was kind of the point of the electronics rule change, wasn't it? Because before, you went from quite a sophisticated electronics package on a Moto3 machine to almost zero electronics on a Moto2 machine, back up to, now, not world superbike spec of sophisticated electronics, but, you know, second-tier sophisticated electronics, which is still way more than you and I are ever going to experience on a motorbike, and probably on a car, to be fair.
I would say so, yeah. I completely agree with you on that. That one, I think the closest thing we get is it the BMW 1000RR.
The R1M is full of electronics. But then I think that might almost be World Superbike spec electronics, which is a higher grade of electronics than MotoGP anyway.
Yeah, I'd like to have a go. I would like to have a go. I wish there was a company out there that had these bikes and you could just go and experience it, like the launch control, just to see what that accelerator control acceleration is like.
Well, there's a guy in town, isn't there? So near you. I don't know if you've ever met him before. He's a massive Valentino Rossi fan. On race weekends, he used to float a 46 flag out of his window. He lived near the doctor's.
Oh, yeah, right on the corner. I know exactly what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So he bought an R1M because it was the closest thing he'd ever get to riding Valentino Rossi's bike. And he said the launch control is the scariest thing in the world because you can have it at full beans and just let the clutch go. And he said the front wheel barely skips. He's like, it will just boom and go. He said it was the most... He said, apparently, he was telling me about it. He was like, the guys in the shop told me I could do it. And I watched the videos and I knew I could do it. And he's like, it took me 6 weeks to have the balls to try it. He's like, I could not believe that you could do it. And yeah, and I watched him one day. He came out and it was when I was working in the chip shop in town. So he came to the shop. He knew it was closed and he was like, Tim, I want to show you because I just don't think I described it enough. And he obviously didn't let me have a go, but he was like, look. And he pinned it and he let it like full revs for a second or two and then just let the clutch go. And he was whoom, away. And the front wheel just skipped ever so gently, but just went. It was incredible to watch. Like, the electronics on that machine are, wow, just on point.
That is scary. I have seen that bike around town because he rides with the dude who's got the KTM RC8.
Yes, he does. I think both him and the RC8 bike have got four or five bikes each. Like, they've got quite the collection.
I do like it when they're out together and they come into the garage and you're around town because you just hear it a mile off.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the KTM. You're like, yep, that's the KTM. Yeah, I'd like to have a go. I would like to have a go. I might have to go and track him down. Just go and borrow your bike.
I'm going to give away a shitload. My old boss knows him. You know my old boss, but he knows him quite well. So he'd be able to put you in touch.
Wee. Boing.
Anyway, so 2020. 2020 is a weird year. I feel like a bit like 2020 sort of came out of nowhere for Bastianini. He really has showed class, and he showed that he can challenge for a title, if not really take the fight to the title winner. He can always be up there, but he's never really been able to, you know, go like in all guns blazing with that fucking battle it out. We'll take it to the final round. He's never really shown he can do that. And then 2020 occurred. And I don't know whether it was the scenario of just a year being fucked and no one knows what was happening just because of COVID, because it's a small season. It's a weird one. The championship leader got really injured. Luca Marini really hurt himself, so that kind of helped. Sam Lowe's hurt himself. He was also a championship favourite, so that helped. But it was just the consistency over those 14 rounds. And He scored a third and two wins in the first four races of the year. So, I mean, that's a fucking solid thing. And a better performance than he'd done at all until this point. Crashed out of Austria, but then scored points in every single race. He took four more podiums from Austria onwards. One of them was a win. And the consistency that he had of constantly scoring kept him ahead of Lowe's and Luca Marini. And he did win the title. It was just 9 points above both guys, but he did win the title. And the other two were certainly the faster riders of the year.
Absolutely.
But it's just the consistency that did it. And boom, here we are. Bastianini, who had been talked up for years, was a world champion.
Exactly. Is that big word in there, consistency? How many times have we said, you don't have to be the fastest. You don't have to be the bravest. You just have to be the most consistent. Mm. You know, you can have these guys not a second, but let's say a tenth faster than you, and they're looking like they're going to win, but that's all right. But if they're faster, they're taking more risks. It's going to bite them in the ass at some point. Just be consistent, and points mean prizes. And like you
points
say,
mean prizes.
Marini got himself injured, Lowe's got himself injured, and Bastianini didn't. And there we go, title by 9 points.
Yeah, exactly. Job done. Happy days. He's a world champion. He comes into MotoGP as a world champion.
I would have liked to see him defend it, but I'm really glad he's now gone up into MotoGP. Because I think he's just going to keep going on and on and better and better.
Yeah, I am quite happy to watch the Moto2 champs go into MotoGP. The only time, and actually he is an example of someone that I wouldn't have mind staying because he got a shit ride at the end of the day. It's one of the worst bikes on the grid. A year-old Ducati. But still, you know, the year-old Ducati is much better than a year-old Ducati was 4 years ago. So
exactly.
You'd maybe rather it's not be... that bad.
No, exactly. If you're going to come up on a Ducati. You'd rather come up now than, like you say, you would 4 or 5 years ago. You know, if that was your only way in 4 or 5 years ago, fucking hell, if I must.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
At least you're like, not bad now. You know, you're going to be more hopeful now than you were 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
That's it. And I sort of want to see if I see a Moto2 champion again stay on and defend his title, I want them to do the Zarco, to do like 8 or 9 race wins, to really crush it, and then just do 2 or 3 years in the bounce of crushing it. That's what I want to see again. The, you know, the Lorenzo, the Pedrosa type.
Exactly.
Well, 250 champions at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with you. That brings us on nicely to this year.
Quite. So 2021, as we've discussed, Bastianini will be riding for the Sponsorama Avintia, whatever the fuck they're called, MotoGP squad. How do we think MotoGP is going to go for Bastianini? I'm sort of the opinion that he's going to perform well, and I think he's going to be Rookie of the Year. But there's two scenarios in which I don't think he'll be Rookie of the Year. I'm going to go over them quickly, but much like our earlier Marquez, let's not get too deeply into it because of we're going to do a prediction show about all this shit. We'll probably get too deeply into it, but I'm going to be quick.
Good.
I think he's going to be Rookie of the Year unless the GP21 is an amazing fucking machine. If Jack Miller can win the title on a GP21, then I think Jorge Martin, riding for the Pramac squad, also on a GP21, will become Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how likely that is. The second option in which Bastianini doesn't become Rookie of the Year is that Luca Marini gets to grips with the GP20, the other side of the garage to Bastianini, way faster than Enea does.
Mm-hmm.
To start with, I didn't think this was very likely, and then it occurred to me all of a sudden that Bagnaia's bike last year was a GP20. Bagnaia is a VR46 rider, gets on very, very well with Luca Marini, and I think Ducati have a vested interest in keeping the VR46 Academy quite happy. So I then wouldn't be surprised if he did get to grips with it quickly. I don't know. I still think there's a 60% chance he'll be Rookie of the Year. How do you feel about it?
Option two,
you think it's going to be Luca Marini?
Yeah, I do. I'd like to see Bastianini come up, because he's champion, and get Rookie of the Year at least. But no, I think you're right. I think the whole VR46 friendship will pay in Luca's favour.
Yeah.
I think that friendship with Bagnaia will definitely help him just to get to that grips far quicker than Bastianini. So I could see option two.
Yep. Option two it is. There it is. That's the final episode, Steve, of our incoming and outgoing riders done. It feels like it's been quite a long slog to get through them all. And I've enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I've actually had quite a lot of fun going back into the history of these
Absolutely,
guys.
Absolutely, yeah. I've really enjoyed it. It does feel 6 weeks of this. It does feel like a long slog.
It has felt like a long slog, but it's also given us a lot to talk about, and it's also got me very excited for MotoGP, which is quite soon. You texted me yesterday, was it, saying the next test is in 19 days?
Yeah, we have got 2 more shows, and then the following show, we will be into testing.
So we're getting there now. It's not long till the racing starts, Steve, and that's, you know... I'm unsure. I haven't looked into it deeply. Every week I've had quite a strong opinion on whether we're going to have the racing or we're not going to have the racing. And I've not really known, just because of obviously the old COVID thing. This week, I haven't really thought about it too much. I don't know what's going on. I feel quite confident we're going to get Qatar.
It's starting to look like we might be doing backflips, mate. I've heard nothing. I've been keeping a real, real close eye on it. And it's coming. Everything's gone quiet. It's done a whole sort of just go off the radar a little bit. No one's really mentioning sort of anything in social media about COVID stopping the races. Dorna's not really saying a lot. I'm sure there's stuff going on behind the scenes with different countries and governments around the world to keep up to date with what their policies are. But the first race of the year is starting to look a little bit close and a little bit good. I mean, what the official Moto GP test starts on the 6th, which is 2 weeks away this Saturday.
So it's coming up quick.
It is ranking round quick. So what will we do next week's show, the following week, so 3 shows from now, we will have had testing.
Oh, wow. So we'll have a lot to talk about. We'll have bikes on track. We'll know all the liveries by then. We'll be seeing... Oh, I think it's all getting exciting, Steve. We are getting there now.
The next 2 weeks are going to be quite busy for us because we've still got a few team launches to go. There'll be a lot of people sort of starting to make their plans to go to Qatar because they've obviously got to be there a little bit early for COVID testing and isolation. So, yeah, I think Qatar have got the 2 week isolation period. So they could potentially be shipping out this weekend.
Yeah, I think they are changing that for the MotoGP paddock, but I'm not sure, but I believe they are. But I don't know that. I think that's just from things I've heard and read. But yeah, so we've got kind of a couple of busy weeks now. So
we have.
It's all getting there. It's all getting exciting, Steve. I can't wait. Guys, if you are excited with us, come over to the Facebook group, come and join us, chat bikes, chat MotoGP, and we can... You know, me and Steve just get excited and talk to each other a lot. So it's nice to have other people to get excited around and talk to as well. Because as you can tell, I get quite drunk sometimes and I become a bit overbearing. I'm a bit much, so I need that diluted. Steve needs my excitement diluted around other people so he hasn't got to deal with the brunt of it all the time.
I don't mind. Normally, in a not an ideal world at all, because we're quite used to long-distance podcasting now. But normally when we first started doing this, we'd be on the sofa and we'd be pissed at each other.
Yeah, that's fair.
The show, I'm secretly quite glad you can't find the old shows that we used to do in like our first season, because they were just a lot of this. Ready? Oh, shit. Tim, we got to talk.
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to be talking. Steve, I forgot we're supposed to be talking. I was just watching some people crack. I don't know. There's a fun corner. Yeah.
Want a beer?
Yeah, let's get a beer.
Let's get a beer. That's it. That's a like spoiler. That's if you're going to find our old shows, there you go.
That pretty much covers it.
And at the end, it would have been a lot of like, have we finished recording? Tim, press the button.
Yeah, I'd be asleep.
We probably both fell asleep. Sarah's coming out kicking us out. Go on.
Yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning. Tim, it's time to eat a fucking leave.
The good old days.
Right, anyway, Steve, we had an email here from Antonio, which I would like to read out to you.
Go for it.
So, hi, Tim and Steve. Really enjoying your podcast. Keep up the great work. I have another question. I read this Crash.net interview with Valentino Rossi, link below, where he was asked about his rivalry with Marc Marquez at the end of 2015, when Rossi believes Marquez tried to aid the title chances of Jorge Lorenzo. It appears that Rossi still feels very strongly about this 6 years later. I'm interested in your respective views on whether you think there is any truth in what he is saying, or is it just sour grapes because he didn't win the title that year? I wasn't following MotoGP closely that year, so I'm only now reading about it. I'm hoping you can discuss it on an upcoming podcast. Any links to the interview, which I will link to in the show notes for anyone who hasn't read it. But this was an interview, actually, I think, with Sky Italia originally, which is then quoted for the MissCrash.net article. There's a nice line in there about this exact subject, which is, and I quote, this is Valentino Rossi. What he did to me is not forgivable. When I think back to those days, I have the same feelings as then. It's been 6 years and it seems difficult to me that my feelings can change. And that's referencing the Malaysia crash and the events that happened in Malaysia that year, in which some people might say Valentino Rossi kicked Marquez off his bike. Other people might say that Marc Marquez was deliberately getting in Rossi's way so that Lorenzo had a higher chance of winning the title. As far as your question goes, Antonio, I kind of think that Rossi's just sour grapes because he didn't win the title. I'm not convinced that Marquez was helping Lorenzo, at least initially, was not helping Lorenzo get to the title. And I know at the time Rossi was saying, well, you know, if I don't win this one, it's one less that Marquez has to win to be able to beat my total. And it's a reasonable argument, you would suppose. And part of me thinks Rossi was thinking it because it's exactly what Rossi would have done in Marquez's position earlier in his career, because we know he was a fearsome competitor. Really, really fearsome competitor. But no, I don't think initially Marquez was trying to help Lorenzo. Towards the very end of the year, in that final round in Valencia when Marquez was almost playing bodyguard for Lorenzo. I don't know how I think about that one. Some days I wake up, I don't wake up thinking like that. It's not like I wake up and just think about Marquez every morning. But some days I think that, yeah, maybe he was just playing bodyguard and helping him win. And maybe that was just a, do you know what, Rossi, fuck you. If you're going to accuse me of this, I'm going to fucking do it. But I don't think up until that point he was. And I don't even know if at that point, I don't even know if I think at that point he was. But it's the most likely scenario that if he was, it would be in that Valencia race. I don't think it was in Malaysia. I don't think it was in Phillip Island, which is the one everyone talks about. Although Phillip Island was a weird one as well. I think it's just Rossi being a bit upset that he didn't win in 2015. And you know what? I am still a bit upset Rossi didn't win in 2015. Because I think it would have been amazing just to see him do number 10, you know, 7 years on from his last title. Like, it would have been great. But that's me. Anyway, that's my opinion on that, Steve. I could probably just keep talking for another 8 minutes, but I won't. I'll rein it in and I'll let you go.
I agree. Sour grapes. I think Rossi knew realistically he wanted the 10th championship because it's got 10 is just better than 9. And he knew that was probably his last good chance to win it. And that first race where Rossi punted off, or supposed to punt off, touch the brake or lever or whatever it was on Marquez's bike where he ran him wide.
Malaysia. I mean, that's a fun race. If anyone hasn't seen it, like, go and look at Malaysia 2015. In fact, go back on, if you can, watch that entire 2015 season.
Do it.
Best season of MotoGP I've ever watched. It was incredible just to watch the to-ing and fro-ing at the front and just to see the title battle. Like, some of the races were pretty shit.
Some were pretty shit, but the whole season had so much panache. It was awesome. But for those of us that have watched a little bit longer, go back even further, 2004, 2005, and watch Rossi, because he did exactly the same. He did exactly the same.
It wasn't the same scenario, was it, for Rossi then? I'm sort of playing devil's advocate here. Was a fearsome competitor, and really hard on his rivals. But at no point was he in that Marc Marquez position. At no point was he in a position where he clearly wasn't going to win the title, but was still fast enough to win every single week. At no point did he get in between two guys that were battling for the championship, because the championships he lost to Casey Stoner, who went on a fucking tear and was unstoppable, and he lost to Nicky Hayden.
Yeah.
But that's because Nicky Hayden was consistent and Rossi kept crashing. It wasn't because there was someone else dueling with Nicky Hayden or dueling with Casey Stoner that Rossi could get in the way of. It's quite a unique scenario that occurred in 2015.
Yeah, it is just sour grapes, because he knew he was not going to get another opportunity like this to win it. So Marquez comes along, and in Malaysia, arguably up until the point where Rossi punted him off, Marquez was just racing, but they were so close that year. This is half the trouble. Rossi had his best chance to beat Marquez. So they were dueling and they were just dicing every corner. But Rossi truly believed he was quicker and he was pulling the lead in certain places, but then Marquez would catch him up. And that's just racing.
And Marquez was racing. Well, both guys, actually, were racing very hard. On the parts of the track they were faster on, they were making big block passes. They were making hard, hard manoeuvres on each other. And they were really racing. And they were slowing each other down, man. Like, I can't remember now the exact timings. But I would say that they were racing so hard, they were losing half, three quarters of a second on the guys in front of them a lap.
Easy. Absolutely easy. And they got too wound up in their own battle.
Yeah.
So fast forward that to now, and Rossi's, of course, he's still sour. He is, because he knows that it's now done, and that was his last chance. And, you know, he's now got 9 trophies out there instead of 10.
Yeah.
That is going to grate in the back of his head forevermore. That will always be his bugbear. It's going to sit in there and just turn cogs.
I'm sure it will be the crash in Valencia in 2006.
Yep.
And I'm sure it will be the Marquez Malaysia incident in 2015.
Exactly. That is it. Those two things are the blots on his paper.
Yeah.
Other than that, you could ask him in 20 years. He'd still have the same opinion. Yeah.
I'm not so convinced, actually. I think when he finishes racing, he'll end up being very good friends with Marquez again.
He probably will. I think they will become good friends in the future. Yeah. If not now, I'm sure they probably get on now.
They get on better now, but they will not get on 100% while they're still racing on the same grid. I think as soon as Rossi finishes racing, and this is assuming Marc Marquez doesn't get into clashes with Luca Marini, but I think that Rossi and Marquez will end up being pretty good friends again.
Yeah, I think so. I can see those in the future with like the VR46 brand, and now Marquez, what he's done for Honda, will definitely be an ambassador one day.
Oh my God, can you imagine a future where Marquez rides a VR46 bike?
That'd be amazing. they will both be on the grid. We will see him, and they will probably be laughing, jovial, joking about it in the future. But until Rossi gives up racing and accepts it, that he's going to just sit there and he's going to gripe and gripe and gripe. And it will be the that'll be the Rocky II scenario, where we see the two fighters at the end of the movie getting in that ring, you know, Zimmer frames chucked aside. Let's settle this.
Just punching meat carcasses.
They'll just like get in a ring, ding, ding, right, one round, buff, bang, you know, arthritis is set in.
Moving on.
Can't get the gloves on. You know, Rossi's got to pop another blue pill.
Yeah.
definitely a bugbear. A gripe is.
Yeah, I think it's sour grapes more than anything, I think.
Massively sour grapes.
Although I also think, and I did respond to Antonio's message this, that I also think it's sour grapes, but I also think Rossi believes what he's saying. I think Rossi believes that the championship was stolen from him. I think he believes that because he's such a fierce competitor that he has so much self-belief and self-confidence that he can't understand another way in which the title was taken from him, in which he lost the title. It can only have been taken from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agree on that one. He still be in this championship now proves how much of a fierce competitor he is. And his love for it is fueled by competitiveness, love, and passion. And that is it. You take any one of those away and he would have retired years ago.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. So there was also another fun bit in that interview that was about Rossi being like, it's a joke that Dovizioso isn't on the grid this year. He's been vice champion X amount of years in a row. I mean, if he doesn't want to be here, that's fair enough. But it's a joke that no team offered him a spot. So there's this weird thing where Rossi's now very pro-Dovi. And I feel like Rossi's always been quite pro-Dovi because Dovi's never really threatened Rossi in the same way that Marquez threatened Rossi, Lorenzo threatened Rossi. Dovi was there in Rossi's prime, but never really rose to the fore until Rossi faded backwards. Exactly. So they've never had an on-track clash, or more than one or two on-track clashes. So they're still, and I guess both being Italian helps. But he was very pro-Dovi in his interview. It was fun to read.
Rossi's friends with anyone who isn't a challenger and a competitor to Rossi's championship hopes. That is pure and utterly it. You go back, you look at the Biaggi feuds, the Sete Gibernau feuds. Look what he did to bloody Biaggi in 2004. Mm. After that, the guy's GB career never came back.
I mean, he literally cursed Gibernau and went, "You'll never win another race." And lo and behold, the man never won another race.
You go back to Rossi's early days and you look at this fire-breathing, competitive young lad who could do no wrong. He was Marquez back then. And you could see the fear, not the fear, that's wrong, but you could see the effect he had on other people.
I think you're right. It's the fear. It's a fear. If you see, in the same way as today, if you see Marquez 0.2 behind you on your pit board, you're like, fuck, he's going to make a move. Yeah. If you see Rossi 0.2 behind you, there's a fear. And I think you're right. I think this is the perfect word. There is a feeling of dread, a feeling of, oh, fuck, he's about to do me here. I can't do anything about it.
I'm trying to think of the race. Rossi's, I can't remember what year it was. I'm sure it was in the 500s. But anyway, Rossi got a 5 or a 10-second penalty.
Oh, it's Phillip Island, and it was on aggregate, and he ended up pulling it out, didn't he, and pulling the 10-second gap out and going.
Yeah, managed to get to the front, got this penalty somehow, some point before, and did it, just went. Yeah. And it is it's never a point where you want to see a runaway leader in a race. If you go back and find this race, I can't remember exactly what year, but it's just incredible to watch this guy just go. And he is seconds.
And I think he did it in like 10 laps or something. He pulled 10 seconds in 10 laps. Like he had to go.
Yeah. It was later in the race. He had no choice and he pins it. Yeah. And it is something to behold. I've never seen it since. I've never seen it before that. And he just does it. And it's that nature. He got off that bike and the smug grin on his face. Because he just came across the line. And I'm sure he did a stand up, arms crossed, just sort of roll across the line.
The Marquez type thing. Yeah. But
yeah. And it was just two fingered salute without doing it. And he goes up and gets on the top spot and it's just like, fuck you all. I'll never forget it. That will stay with me forever. And it was just something to behold. If you've not seen it, go back and find it.
Yeah, certainly. I think that's bringing us pretty close to the end of the show, Steve.
I think that is, mate. I was then looking down the notes and I'm thinking, we are into the bold writing.
Yeah, exactly. So, guys, if you have anything you want to say to us, you've got any questions for us, like Antonio did this week, you can reach us on...
We are For the Love of MotoGP. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter, or come and join us on our Facebook group. Come and get involved, have chats, have discussions, do a quiz. We're there. Or simply drop us an email at fortheloveofmotogp@gmail.com.
Pew, boom! Pew, pew, pew. First time, my friend. Nailed it. Happy
Got
days.
An idea. Got an idea.
Oh, he's away. He's got a party popper saved.
There might be a party. I've just thought.
It's a party popper, isn't it? He's got a party popper.
Let's have a look in the cupboard.
Oh, he's up to get the party poppers as well. Whoa, this is, guys, for you guys listening, you can't see this, but we're getting a tour of Steve's house right now while he's on the search for the party poppers.
I am. I've got to hold the cupboard open with my head, though.
It's actually an impressive thing to see you holding a cupboard open with your head, Steve. I'm really quite upset that the listeners can't see this.
Well, holding a laptop. Oh, shit. All the Christmas wrapping papers, but full out of the cupboard. Oh, here we go.
Oh, it's gone.
Oh, God.
It sounds like it's all going very badly for you, Steve.
I'm glad Sarah's not in here. She's going to go bursting in a minute. I've got a whole
bag.
She's
like, what the fuck are you doing with the party poppers? It's an entire bag of party poppers, too.
It's an entire bag of party poppers.
Oh, my God, you've really made a mess of the cupboard.
I have made a mess of the cupboard. Held up. Here we go. Are you ready, listeners? Yay!
I'm really not sure it was worth it.
No, I'm not. And now it smells.
Oh, that was great. Anyway, Steve, I have, before we end the show, obviously I've started doing this thing where I'm like, oh, what's the fun motorbike thing you found this week? And I have discovered a couple of things. The first one, Isle of Man TT's YouTube channel has got some amazing reruns of old races. It's got some great classic documentaries about the best races. And you could easily spend, you've literally got Party Popper on your head. But you could spend a few days with Party Popper on your head watching the Isle of Man TT YouTube channel. Some great, great races. I can suggest they have a greatest race of all time that was great. It was a Fogarty and Ian Hislop race. Ian Hislop, Steve Hislop. That's embarrassing.
Steve Hislop.
Steve, okay, there we go. Thank you. And it also had Joey Dunlop's 2000 comeback to the Isle of Man, where he hadn't won in like 15 years or something, and then just went on a tear and won a shitload more stuff. That was really good. So watch that. It's really good. It'll get you through the next few weeks. And there's also a fun race on a fun article on The Race. About Rossi's feuds with his rivals. Quite fitting, considering what I've just discussed.
I've read that. That's really good.
Yeah, that's a really fun article. So I'll link that as well. I'm aware that it seems a little bit like we kind of just plug the race a lot. And that is mainly because I think it's just a very good website. I use it for my Formula One news as well and Formula E news. And I actually find myself reading like IndyCar news on there, even though I don't know anything about IndyCar. I'm just like, I just want to read a fun article.
Tim just loves on the race. Motorsport in general.
I do. Yeah, that's fair. And I think the race is just a very, very good news website.
It's because they cover all bases, don't they? Just literally cover everything, which is really good. So it's a one-stop shop for all your motorsport needs.
They even cover esports, which I think is quite good, because I'm in two camps with esports. Part of me thinks it's just playing fucking Gran Turismo, get over it. And the other part of me is like, however, if the market is there, then fucking get good at it and earn hundreds of thousands for it.
Exactly. I like the esports. I think they're really good. I can't do it. I've tried.
Yeah.
I've bought the new MotoGP game. Oh my god.
Oh, are you competing in to get into the esports championship this year?
No, I missed it.
Oh, Steve, I was getting ready to, like, we could do a weekly roundup of what you've been up to.
I'm gonna still do the career, and I will be posting on the Facebook group, like clip-its, snippets of the racing. I will. There is somewhere on our social media a cracking clip of when you put Marquez through the fence.
Was that at your house?
That wasn't my house. I'll put that back on there for people who haven't seen it, because we killed him. Badly killed him. Yeah, I think that's it, mate.
Yeah, fair enough. So that brings us to the end, guys. So we've mentioned it enough. I'm going to mention it one more time anyway, guys. Come over to the Facebook group. Join us. Have a chat. Have a laugh. It's been fun. I've had a very fun week, actually. I don't have fun on social media, but I've had a fun week in that group. It's been good. So come over and join us. Let's do this. Anyway, I'm over the excitement with that. Not over the Facebook group, I'm just over my overexcitement in general. So we're about to end the show, guys. Do us a solid, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It really helpful. If you can just leave us a nice message, we really like Tim and Steve, that would be great. And thank you all very, very much for listening, guys. It's been wonderful, and we will continue to bring shows throughout the year. So stay safe, look after each other, fist bumps, elbow bumps. And remember, folks, mask it or casket. Look after each other. We'll speak to you next week, guys. Goodbye.
Take care, guys.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.